Good afternoon. It is definitely winter here in Tacoma. You're listening to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. This week, we're talking to Michael Dedore in the first part of our show, continuing our interviews from the CFI Summit in October. In the second part of the show, we'll be catching up with current events, specifically my adventures with Pierce County Council this week. Michael Dedore is director of the Center for Inquiry's Office of Public Policy and the organization's representative to the United Nations. He is the former director of CFI's New York City office and spent time as a news writer and editor at both FoxNews.com and the City University of New York. He blogs at The Moral Perspective. How are you doing today?
Excellent. Thanks for having me on.
All right. For CFI representative to the United Nations. That was a little out of left field to me. What's that like, I guess?
Oh, it's exciting. It's great. So back in 2006, there was a guy named Austin Dacey.
Mm-hmm.
And Austin got CFI, or rather he applied at the United Nations for consultative status, for CFI to get consultative status at the UN, which basically means that the United Nations recognizes you, or rather your organization, as an organization that has something important to say about issues that happen within the United Nations.
Right.
And specifically, the issues that CFI works on at the UN are freedom of religion, freedom of belief, freedom of expression, and some other human rights work.
Right.
So the kind of work that we do at the UN is wide-ranging, but the two most common things that we do are, one, we belong to a range of different NGO committees. So there are these NGO committees at the UN, which are just collections of non-governmental organizations, non-profit organizations like CFI that care very much about certain issues going on at the UN. So, right. For example, we belong to the NGO Committee on Freedom of Religion or Belief, as does Baptist groups and Catholic groups and all sorts of other Christian groups and other religious groups that care specifically about attempts at the UN to restrict freedom of expression, freedom of speech, and things like that. So we work with NGOs and collaborate with them to try to affect things that are happening within the UN. We invite delegations and representatives from foreign governments to come and meet with us and try to have conversations about things that are going on. The other thing that we do is more kind of direct lobbying. So the UN has many conferences throughout the year. And actually, these happen all over the world. So we have representatives in Geneva at the Human Rights Council, which happens once a year. And our representatives go and they deliver statements and they meet and they kind of lobby in the halls and meet people in cafeterias and try to, pin someone in a corner who's from a country that we're particularly concerned with
right.
abuses of human rights. And I do the same thing in New York. When they have conferences, I apply to submit statements or to deliver statements at the conference itself. And then I actually attend the conference and try to haggle people in the hallways and in the cafeterias and say, hey, you just threw someone in jail for blasphemy. That's not cool. Can we talk about that?
That's really interesting to me. And unfortunately, the problem is that a lot of when I ask questions like this, the answers tend to be, well, it's a lot less sexy than you think it is. But I mean, the United Nations just went through a thing where I think Saudi Arabia was going to be on the Security Council. And you are a representative for, an organization for free inquiry, for humanists, for atheists, people who would be jailed for existing in a nation that was going to be on the Security Council. When you find yourself interacting with people from those nations, is there a lot of tension? Is it, it seems like it should be dramatic to me, but...
It should be dramatic, but the representatives from those countries obviously are, in a way, restricted in what they can say
right.
in conversations at the UN, public conversations, because they're tied to what their country believes and what their country advocates. And so they can only say so much, at least in public. The dramatic stuff is what happens behind closed doors, the kind of stuff that I can't really run around and talk about, because the only reason why they're even saying those kinds of things to me is because I say, yes, I'm willing to have a private conversation with you, and we're not going to tell anyone what you said. But that's where the dramatic stuff happens. That's
yeah.
where you learn that perhaps there's more dissent within the government than you think on certain issues like blasphemy, or that there might be some ways to actually help this person who was just arrested for blasphemy that the foreign government would never tell you, but a minister or someone in a back room might be able to give you a hint.
Yeah, as much as my journalistic organs are telling me, push him on that one, I think the important thing for me here and a lot of important people in the Freethought community is that the CFI is able to participate in those kind of conversations, and that's something I really like to hear.
It's exhilarating, and actually what's been nice is that in 2006 when CFI received consultative status, the only other group at the UN at that time that was doing similar kinds of work, explicitly secular perspective work was the International Humanist and Ethical Union.
Yeah.
Well, now the British Humanist Association and the Atheist Alliance International Organization have both received consultative status at the UN. So now we've doubled the explicit secular perspective at the UN. Yeah. And so that gives us a great ability now to, for example, when the Human Rights Council happens in Geneva, to look at the list of issues that are going to be addressed at that council and kind of assign all these different representatives to tackle all kinds of different issues. And so we're not kind of beholden to one issue, or we're not thinking, well, we only have two representatives, so we don't have a whole lot of time. We have, you know, we don't want to spread them too thin. We're actually able to now make some progress. And so at the last Human Rights Council, we were able to get, I think about a dozen statements collectively between the four organizations delivered. We were able to get some news media coverage from Reuters and some other places. And so I think what you're seeing is, alongside the kind of American, more domestic growth of the nuns and people who are concerned about secular government and things of that nature, that's also now, you know, exploding at the UN, which is a nice thing to see.
So as part of Center for Inquiry and as explicitly a lobbyist, you know, many young people have this sort of, icky feeling about lobbying and about politics and whatnot. But it sounds like you're very much an activist, and this is one of the avenues for your activism. How did you end up deciding to take your sort of activism and bring it into politics?
Good question. Yeah, there definitely is a negative connotation with the word lobbyist. In fact, I lived in New York City for 7 or 8 years before moving down to D.C. Last March. And I recently, during a trip, I went back to Brooklyn, where I used to live, and I was sitting down at this coffee shop I used to go to. And I'm sitting down drinking a coffee and reading a book or something like that. And the woman says, you know, you look really familiar. Do you used to come in here? And I said, yeah, you know, I used to live here. I moved to D.C. And she goes, what do you do now? And I said, I'm a lobbyist. And like several people at the bar kind of looked over and said, like, should you be saying that out loud? do you really want people to know that about you? Here's the thing. There are two different types of lobbyists. There are definitely the kind of corporate lobby group. You know, they don't really care about particular interests other than protecting the interests of their, you know, client, or, you know, making sure that regulations don't go through. You know, we're talking about pharmaceutical lobbyists,
yeah,
oil company lobbyists, and things like that. But then there's a whole other world of lobbyists, which is kind of nonprofit world of lobbyists. So it's lobbyists like the people at CFI or Americans United for Separation of Church and State, people with the ACLU, education groups, civil rights groups, who are doing, I think, really good work on behalf of not necessarily clients who are trying to protect their financial interests, but people who are, for example, downstairs at this conference right now, who are interested in church-state separation, but can't get totally involved with that, you know, especially on Capitol Hill. The way that I came into the kind of political aspect of this, one, I've always been interested in politics. I was my favorite subject throughout school. It was my first major in undergrad. I ended up switching to communication theory, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah.
And had kind of a broader application to it. So I started studying communication theory, but I was always interested in politics. And what happened is, when I graduated from college, I was looking into some journalism jobs because I thought that would be something that I'd be interested in. And I had a hard time finding a job. And as you mentioned in my bio, I was eventually hired by FoxNews.com.
Yeah, I got something in that later.
Yeah. Which people usually laugh about at conferences when it's announced as if it's a joke. But no, it's actually true. I spent 2 years working at FoxNews.com. And I just got totally, you know, jaded about the news business, and I didn't want to be involved in it anymore. So I started thinking about, well, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? I was looking at, like, for example, news editors and saying, that's not the kind of life that I want. I want something different. So I started looking into graduate programs, and I ended up settling on City University of New York and their political theory program at Brooklyn College, and got involved in that. And so once I got involved in that, I was already kind of aware that there were organizations out there doing actual political work and advocacy work and activism and things like that. And so I started, you know, looking out which ones were the most involved. And I thought that CFI was doing a great job, and I started volunteering for CFI. It just so happened that, you know, I did a decent job, and when they had an opening, I ended up getting hired. I finished my political theory degree when I was still working at CFI in New York City, and I started kind of nudging them, saying, hey, by the way, I just got this master's in political theory, and I think at some point I'd like to get some experience in the political realm. So if you ever want to just kind of throw things my way, I'd be happy to help. Well, what happened is eventually we wanted to reopen because we had kind of closed down our Office of Public Policy when the economy crashed in 2009. CFI wanted to reopen its Office of Public Policy, and I had just gotten the degree and I had shown some interest. And so Ron Lindsay called me up one day and said, hey, do you want to move to Washington, D.C.? And there I am.
And there you are.
Yeah.
So you're at the other Washington, and now you're coming to this Washington.
I'm on the other coast, yeah.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. When we come back from the break, we'll continue our talk with Michael Dodora, CFI's UN rep.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran.
And we host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. We invite a rotating panel of our friends over to talk about science fiction, comic books, movies, horror, animation, professional wrestling, video games, and George freaking Lucas.
It's a warts and all look at popular geek culture, where we tip sacred cows and use profanity while arguing about children's entertainment.
Think of it as the McLaughlin Group for nerds.
Find us online at RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
If you are a humanist, atheist, or freethinker from Everett, Washington to the Canadian border, Humanists of North Puget Sound welcomes you. Your freethought neighbors to the north have been promoting secular ideas for over 20 years. They're humanists, with a rational worldview, informed by science, inspired by art, and motivated by compassion. Join up for monthly conversation, camaraderie, and activism. Humanists of North Puget Sound. Visit humanistsnps.org.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show in the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
Welcome back to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We're interviewing Michael Dodora, Director for CFI's Office of Public Policy.
That's a very international focus and a very national focus. I mean, between New York and between D.C., what kind of advice would you have for people looking at doing advocacy work for lobbying of their political, you know, officials, their elected officials in places like Washington State, where it sometimes seems very divorced from the world of Washington, D.C.?
Sure. Well, one thing that I do often tell people in local communities and at the state level is that this whole thing is not going to go anywhere unless we all work together on this. You know, when I go to meet with senators from Washington State or representatives from Washington State because they sit on an important committee or they're a sponsor of a bill that we care about, it's more difficult for me to lobby them if they don't think or they don't know that I have constituents that are in their district or in their state. So it's actually extraordinarily important that people in the states and the local levels get involved in going to meet and, you know, emailing and calling their representatives, certainly state representatives, but also federal level representatives and senators, because it shows them that you exist. And that is something that I think is more important than people realize. You know, I do understand how easily it is to get jaded about politics in America. I understand that people think nothing really ever changes, nothing really ever gets done. You know, the thing is, a lot of stuff does get done. A lot of it's actually really bad and harmful for the society. And I also understand that, you know, you might be meeting with a more conservative or right-wing senator or representative in your, because you know, that's who represents you. But the thing is, they're not even going to consider your interests unless they know that you exist in their district. I mean, these people cannot possibly know that there is a, you know, Seattle atheist group.
Yeah.
Without the Seattle atheists going and saying, hey, we have a group in Seattle and we're really active and we have a bunch of people who have interest in church-state separation or science, you know, scientific integrity. So I think it's actually just really important if you just schedule meetings with your representatives, write them letters, just even introducing yourself, saying, I'm an atheist, I'm a secularist, I'm a humanist, I'm a skeptic who lives in your district and I have certain concerns and, you know, thank you for voting a certain way on a bill, or, you know, you voted this way on a bill and I wasn't happy about that. Just make your, you know, concerns noted and voiced.
I've been trying to actually do a little bit of, it's Washington. I grew up in Chicago, where if you didn't personally know the Daley family, you couldn't get a job in politics. And then I moved to Arizona, and I think the political scene in Arizona is fairly well known by people who listen to this show. And then I moved here, and I'll be honest with you, I have never seen a population of people so jaded about politics as the people that I've met here in the Pacific Northwest. I just manifestly don't seem to believe that the democratic political process could work at all. And that's been one of my biggest stumbling blocks into trying to get even sort of a local policy summit or meet and greet type thing implemented here in Washington. Because even in happy, groovy Washington State, where one person in four is a religious nun, it is trivial for a politician to throw atheists or those godless humanists for cheap heat, for a cheap vote, even amongst what people would consider liberal politicians. And do you see that kind of activity on the national scale, or is it just something I'm sensitive to because I'm living in a jaded political environment?
You mean, do I see the jaded sense of politics like all over the United States?
Yeah.
Or yeah, absolutely. I mean, I sensed it in New York. I sense it in, so one of the things I try to do is I try to go around to CFI communities across the United States and get them charged up and tell them how important it is to get involved in politics. And it is very difficult to convince people that it's important to get involved in politics. You know, we've had these kind of summit, policy summits or lobby days, and not a whole lot of people show up, at these local ones. If you have it in DC, actually a lot of people come. But the local ones, you know, people are less interested, I guess, in getting involved locally. The thing is, actually, it's more important for people to get involved locally than it probably is for them to get involved at the federal level. I'm not saying they shouldn't get involved in contacting their federal lawmakers, but you can have much more change at the local level, at the state level, than you probably can at the federal level. And that's just kind of the nature of politics.
Yeah.
I definitely see the jadedness, the people who say nothing's ever going to change. Why should I get involved? And I think we as a community just have to make it more apparent and more obvious why it's so important that we get involved. And I think, you know, we have to look to other political movements or other social movements to show why it's important to get involved in the process. You know, you have to look at, and I'm not in any way comparing the movements necessarily in terms of their content or their goals, but if you look at the LGBT rights movement and other movements, these were not movements where people kind of just went to hotel ballrooms and had conversations about, should LGBT people be equal, and what does that mean, and why are the religious people wrong about LGBT rights? I mean, they actually went out. They did protests. They got involved on the ground. They filed lawsuits. These are things that certainly atheists and humanists and skeptics and secularists are already doing, but I think we need to do a lot more of it. And it doesn't really take a whole lot of time or energy, I think, even to just call your representative or your senator and say, hey, I have some concerns. I'm an atheist in your district. And they'll hear you out. I mean, they might not actually throw you a bone, but
now they know you exist.
They know you exist, and they will consider that in the future.
I mean, it's like if you want to talk to a boxer, you don't talk to him in the ring. You talk to him outside the ring. As it were, if you want to talk to a politician, you don't talk to him in the beltway.
Yeah, in fact, if you can get, you know, meetings in the home district offices,
yeah,
those people will listen to you. I mean, you're rarely, when you schedule meetings, when you call up, and it's really easy. You just call up or your email and say, I'm a constituent, and you can either go by yourself or you can bring a couple of people from a local group that you belong to, mm-hmm. And say, we're constituents and we care about certain issues. And, you know, you're probably not going to meet with the politicians. It's actually rare. I mean, it's more often that you will meet with them at the state and local levels.
Yeah.
At the federal level, even as a lobbyist, I rarely meet with the actual politicians when I do these meetings, but they will hear you out. You know, you'll sit in there for 30, 45 minutes and they'll just take notes. And don't be concerned if, you know, they're not looking at you and responding to everything you say, but they're here, yeah, and they'll report back.
Yeah, I had experience as a staffer in a senator's office, in a local office, and I'll tell you, as a staffer, it was fun when we got to meet the elected representative as well. You know, I'm wondering, Michael, you had, you know, various job experiences before joining CFI as a paid employee. Did you ever have any trepidation saying, as part of my political career, my professional career, I'm going to be explicitly linked with an atheist secular humanist organization?
No.
Yay.
Tell us how. Tell us how that you're not afraid of that, because a lot of our listeners, and in general, you know, if an atheist links themselves professionally to atheism, sometimes that can, you know, provide some or make for some difficulties.
It can, but it shouldn't, and that's the kind of society that we're working towards.
Right.
And I have this unbridled optimism that we will eventually get to this point within my lifetime where saying and standing up and saying that you're an atheist, but that you want to run for political office or, you know, you want to do something else, society will not look at you any less for that. I do have hope about that. I do think, I mean, and that's not necessarily that we're going to convert society to atheism or anything like that, but that there will be a greater acceptance for atheists in society. The other thing I would say, though, is that one of the reasons why I was attracted to CFI, and this is no knock on other organizations which I support in the movement and in the community, but one of the reasons why I was attracted to CFI is that atheism is certainly a part of the organization, but it's this really big organization that has lots of different components and things going on. So yeah, there are some people that are, you know, trying to advance atheism and they're out there doing God debates and things like that. But, you know, the main focuses are on, you know, reason, science, secular values, freedom of inquiry, humanism, skepticism. And it's more about the ideas and the process and less about the conclusions and the positions that you reach. And certainly those positions matter. And specifically in politics, we have to talk a lot about positions. We have to make claims about bills and things like that. But the reason why I was so attracted to CFI is that it wasn't an atheist organization per se, but it was an organization that cared about certain ideas. And if you're an atheist, certainly you're probably going to be more friendly to those ideas, but there's nothing preventing other people, you know, such as deists or whatnot, from getting behind this stuff.
It's something that we've talked about, is the fine line between advocacy and evangelism. We are a community, we do exist, and we do matter to the political process, and we matter to the social process. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about here.
Absolutely. You know, I mentioned it to a friend a couple weeks ago, because I was at my apartment in Washington, D.C., and I was working from home. And midday, some people come knock on my door, and they're, you know, from the Jehovah's Witness, trying to convert me to their religion, and they have books that they're going to give me and stuff like that. And actually, they have this really genius ploy now where some of them bring around their children.
Yes, they do that here.
So it makes you feel really awful about not answering the door. So usually what I do is I answer the door and say, you know, I'm not interested. You know, no, thank you. Have a good day. But, you know, for some reason this day I thought, you know, I've never heard of an atheist going door to door, knocking on people's doors and saying, hey, have you heard about atheism? I have copies of the God Delusion here. You know, the kind of stuff that we're doing is advocating. We're advocating for viewpoints. We're advocating for methodologies and thinking. We're advocating for critical thinking. We're advocating for science. And we're putting up billboards and we're doing TV shows and, you know, we're doing radio shows and things like that. Nobody is being forced to see this stuff necessarily. No one's forced to access this stuff. You know, no one's coming to your door or calling you and saying, have you heard the good news about atheism lately? And I think that is an important distinction. You know, we're just getting the information out there. You know, I remember when Dawkins and the new atheism was really big and the God Delusion was selling like crazy. Everyone was saying, like, you know, this guy's an evangelical atheist. And it was just like, he sells books. I mean, you can go to Barnes & Noble and pick one up if you want, but no one's forcing you to read the book. So I don't understand.
I mean, I do think the day is coming, because every once in a while we'll be at a convention or a meeting or something like that. And hey, and somebody will go, hey, we should go door to door. And then everybody else in the room goes, no, that's stupid. Don't do that. But it seems to happen with more and more regularity. And I think one of these days somebody's going to give it a shot.
I think they're going to give it a shot too. We also catch a little bit of heat sometimes because Sam and I work with community organizations and we have a public presence at some of our street fairs.
And I love the people who directly equate that to going door to door.
Yes.
I mean, there is a sensitivity to social perception, I think, in the free thought and skeptical communities that I think on some level we kind of have to ignore. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to advocate for our position.
It's crazy to think that that's evangelizing, setting up a table. table at a street fair. I mean, so many other nonprofit groups set up tables there. You know, you might go to a street fair and the ACLU is there. Well, is the ACLU evangelizing now because it has a table of information of the work that it does? And it says, hey, if you're interested in this, we exist and we have Skeptics in the Pub down the street every Friday night. You should come hang out with us. You know, CFI puts up billboards, as does all these groups, just saying you don't need God to be a decent human being. And you can find out more information on his website and find some groups to get involved with if you believe that. There definitely is some evangelizing within the movement. I mean, you know, to convert people to atheism. And I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with that. I don't know how successful some of those efforts will be. But I don't think we're certainly not at the point yet where the religious groups are. I think that you're probably right. I think the way the nature of atheism and the way this movement has worked is, you know, people have all kinds of ideas and they want to pursue all sorts of things. And you probably will at some point get an atheist group that just focuses on going door to door and handing out copies of books and trying to get people involved with atheism. I don't feel that great about that idea, but if that's going to happen, you know,
I look forward to complaining about it.
There's nothing I can really do about it, you know. And
well, the Jehovah's Witnesses, they do their Joe Hoedown. I don't know what they call it, but it's every year here in Tacoma.
It's just a little bit bigger than their summit. It's the whole regional gathering of all Washington State Jehovah's Witnesses.
And since they're all basically commanded to participate, I mean, it's a pretty good turnout. And there's usually got some people out knocking door to door about 3 weeks either side of that, and they always bring their kids with them. I'm like, oh geez. And it's like, I'm like, your kids are not going to protect you from me saying things. I don't generally like swear at them or show up, you know, covered in goat's blood and naked or anything like that,
but you've thought about that.
I've thought about it clearly. But what I really like is I've had, you know, the Mormons do this, I've had the Jehovah's Witnesses do this, and knock knock knock, and I'm usually doing something show related, and I open the door and they go, hey, have you heard the good news, etc. And I'm like, yes, I have heard the good news often. I am a producer of an atheist radio show here in Tacoma. Would you and your children like to sit down with me and listen to an episode? No, we have to go. Thank you. Door. Oh, can I have a watchtower? Because I love the watchtower. It's funny.
Oh, those things are great to read. Yeah.
It is. I have a question about back to the lobbying.
No, sure, go.
And I don't know if it's
the actual interview.
I don't know if it's one thing that you can talk about, but have there been any really surprisingly pleasant responses that you've gotten from people that you maybe hadn't expected? That's a long pause.
It's a tough question. So one of the things I did mention yesterday during the event, someone asked me this question: what happens when you go into these rooms with either staffers or politicians who don't believe in climate science or don't accept climate science, don't accept the theory of evolution, are science deniers, or don't believe in separation of church and state, or, you know, people that are obviously of a very different persuasion politically than CFI likes. What are those meetings like? I have been actually happy to see that for the most part, when I go into meetings with those representatives and senators, at the very least, their staff is willing to listen to you and hear you out, and they'll take your information and they will process it and perhaps pass it along to someone else up the chain. That has been, you know, I had not a whole lot of knowledge about how the whole lobbying thing would work out, you know, when I went down there. I had a political theory degree, and so I had some background knowledge of American politics. I've always been interested in this, and then I read some books on lobbying, and then like the first couple months I was down there, what I really did was I was just ask out lobbyists to lunch all the time, and I would say, can we just go talk about, you know, what this is all about? And I have been pleasantly surprised that people on the Hill who were not in line with CFI in a lot of positions actually will at the very least hear you out. So that's been good. On the other side, I've also been disappointed that some of the people that you think would be more open to being fierce advocates for some of the things that we believe in have been a little bit more cautious in aligning themselves. Maybe not with atheists per se, but, you know, on the Hill, it's like if you believe in separation of church and state, obviously you hate religion, right?
Right.
So, you know, a lot of kind of liberals and Democrats are scared to take strong positions on separation of church and state because of the way society is right now. They're scared that will lose them elections because the religious people in their districts or in their states will think this guy is just anti-religious. And you know, we've seen this with all sorts of politicians throughout the ages. And that's been unfortunate to me. So one of the most important things we do on the Hill is trying to not necessarily go out to the people who disagree with us and trying to convince them, but getting the people who already agree with us to actually stand strong in the principles that they believe in, and just getting them to actually go out and talk about that stuff and talk about it on the floor of the House or the Senate, or, you know, take positions on bills publicly.
One of the questions I've always wanted to ask somebody who does public policy for our community is, do you sometimes talk to staffers and then, like, in the middle of the conversation or towards the end of it, they go, is, you know what the evidence is, I know what the evidence is, but I have to pass this up the yutz chain? Has that, you don't have to name names, has that happened?
Yes.
Okay. I am happier today.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, staffers will usually be pretty honest with you.
Yeah.
And you want that, actually. I don't want staffers who are going to say, you know, give me kind of cherry-coated stuff about what the representative or the senator might actually do. I want those people to be honest with me about where their representative stands on issues, so that I know, all right, this meeting was either productive and we should look forward to hearing from you and working with you going forward, or no, you just shut us down, and now I can go, you know, write that down in my notes and consider it the next time a bill's going to come up, or publicize it. You know, we've had meetings with people who have sponsored bills on Capitol Hill that we've wanted to get some language changed or language added to the bill to, for example, you know, they're like international religious freedom resolutions and bills in the House, basically just saying that the House really cares about international religious freedom and thinks that the U.S. government has a, you know, important role to play in these debates. And some of them actually also are trying to create positions in the State Department to care about certain religious freedom issues. But very often these bills are sponsored by Republicans, you know, kind of Christian lawmakers who are particularly concerned with the plight of Christians abroad, which certainly Christians abroad are discriminated against and persecuted.
Yeah, absolutely.
But very often these bills, I mean, for the most part, they don't mention the fact that atheists can't even form communities abroad like Christians can, because if we just raise our hand and say we exist there, they throw you in jail and lock the door. So we've made some efforts to try to get these members of Congress to include atheists and skeptics and humanists in the language of these bills. And more often than not, what usually the staff will say is that, no, it's just not going to happen.
Mm. Now, as CFI Public Policy Director, are you only focused on the U.S. perspective? Because maybe 6 months ago or so, we spoke with reps from CFI Canada that talked about their Office of Religious Freedom.
Yeah.
From the Canadian perspective, that they actually did get the language in saying, yes, and we support advocating for the rights of non-believers in these other countries that are also subjected to that persecution. Are you involved in that at all?
I am. I coordinate with people up in Canada. And actually, it's very important that we coordinate on issues like that. When Canada announced it was launching this Office of International Religious Freedom and the director would be Andrew Bennett, one of the first things we did was we coordinated, and CFI Canada sent up a letter to Andrew Bennett and said, hey, you're the new director. We're the largest kind of secular humanist and skeptic group in Canada. We think that we should have a meeting with you to talk about some of our concerns. And he granted that meeting, and they had a meeting with him. Now, the great thing about that was that that was not just a one-off experience. What ended up happening is several months later, the NGO Committee on Freedom of Religion or Belief, which I mentioned before, it's an NGO committee that CFI belongs to. I'm the secretary of the committee, and Matt Cherry actually is the president. He's the IHEU representative. We then invited Andrew Bennett down to come to New York to have a meeting with our committee. And we ended up setting something up with the Canadian mission across the street from the UN. And I met Andrew Bennett at the event, and I said, I'm Michael Ledore with the Center for Inquiry. And he said, oh, yeah, the Center for Inquiry. Yeah, I met those people up in Canada. I love you guys. It was a great meeting. You know, we should definitely keep in touch, and I'd like to work with you going forward. And so what we've actually been able to do now is, because of our presence at the UN, even though he's a Canadian ambassador, we do have that international focus. And so we've been able to coordinate with his office on some international religious freedom issues, and we're hoping to do that even more going forward. So, you know, the thing is, it's a little bit more difficult, you know, because they're not at the State Department, they're not down the street, but because we have that international focus, it enables us to do that kind of work.
Fantastic. So, finally, on a much less critical note, it does say in your bio that you wrote for FoxNews.com.
Yes.
And we tend to avoid, non-believers, skeptics, atheists, humanists, tend to are a much wider political spectrum than people might believe. But I think a lot of people in our community will say that the treatment we have received from Fox News has been far away from what we would consider ideal. I assume while you were at Fox News, you were a secularist. How does the community react when you have to say, no, it's not a joke, I actually work there?
Gasps. Gasps. And stunned looks. You know, it's not a joke, I actually work there. The interesting thing about working there was, you know, there are a lot more liberals or secularists and atheists that work at Fox News than you think.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about Fox News is, and I imagine that many news agencies do this, if you're a journalism student, you're interested in getting a job in journalism in America, it's very difficult. You have to kind of work at a local newspaper for five or 7 years, making no money, having no health benefits. I looked into these jobs. I applied for them. I was offered these jobs and I turned them all down because...
Have a small radio show in Tacoma, Washington.
Sure, yeah. That might be a step towards something bigger, and there's nothing wrong with that if that's what you want to do with your career. But I started thinking about it and I thought, I don't think I want to invest that much in this. So I started applying to some of the bigger news outlets. And what's actually interesting is that I applied to FoxSports.com technically.
Oh, all right.
To be a web person for the baseball division because I'm a big baseball fan.
No kidding.
And what happened is one day I got a call from FoxNews.com saying, I know you applied to FoxSports.com, but I'm the executive editor of FoxNews.com. We're short some people right now. We have some openings. I'd love to bring you for an interview. Yeah, I ended up accepting the job. And like I said before, what I quickly learned is that because Fox News is this major news organization and can pay a lot more than the local newspapers, it can hire younger people, you know, who are like, you know, the idea of working in New York and working in a major news organization and actually making a decent salary and being able to live in an apartment that's not,
right,
you know, horrible, sounds pretty good to me. And so in the newsroom, I thought actually, you know, the majority of the newsroom probably didn't necessarily agree with most of what Fox News was doing. Now, I happened to be lucky because the guy who was running the .com at that time was not, you know, a dyed-in-the-wool Fox News person. So you know, it's interesting. Once you get into those newsrooms, you find out that sometimes while the people making the decisions and controlling what actually appears on the website might think one thing, the people who are actually doing the work might think another thing, but they're just there because they need a job. And the one thing I would say is that fortunately I have been able to go back a couple times and get a dose of revenge, if you will. because after I left Fox News, it was 2007, I started getting involved in CFI. And once I started getting involved with CFI, you know, we started doing billboard campaigns and I started doing political work. And so Fox News calls you up and says, hey, can you come on and talk about your latest billboard or this political issue? And so I've gotten to go back on a couple different programs, including Hannity, and say my bit and hopefully, you know, like I said, get a dose of revenge.
Fantastic. So Becky and I met, getting close to 7 or 8 years
seven,
ago now.
Yeah.
And so she was, you know, in the dating scene and saying, you know, I like baseball, talk about baseball. And her dates were like, you know.
They're like, oh, yes, I'll go out on a date with you. I know baseball, and figure out they don't know what a balk is. They don't know that there's two different leagues. That what? The pitcher doesn't have to play baseball unless they're pitching?
We had to be told we were dating. We started going out to dinner together, having conversations, and sort of paying for each other. And then like a month later, it was like, you guys know you're dating, right? Like, oh, really? All right. And then we were at,
Sonora Brew House in Phoenix, Arizona.
I'm looking at the TV and it's like the Diamondbacks and I think the Rockies. I don't even know. It was like getting towards the playoffs and I'm just watching this game and it's right at the end. It's like, okay, run down between shortstop and third at the end, take the base, done. And she's like, you do know baseball. It's like, yeah, I said I know baseball. Why would I lie about that? Everybody knows baseball.
Everybody knows baseball. I mean, knows about baseball, but not many people actually know a lot of the different rules about baseball and how the whole game works.
I'm from the north side of Chicago. Well, I'm from the northwest suburbs. Becky's originally from Boston.
Cubs and Red Sox or what? Okay.
Yeah. So, and it was okay for a little while because both of us were in these terrible, terrible, you know, sports team positions, except now the Red Sox have kind of, you know, like mastered things. They have a dynasty for the last decade.
I don't want to say East Coast bias every 5 minutes, but East Coast bias. And
someone who doesn't like the the Red Sox,
so,
you.
Right. So I'm, well, this year, given the World Series, I'm rooting for Skylab at this point.
He's rooting for the Meteor.
I'm rooting for the Meteor to come and end the World Series.
Since your cards are the rivals to the Cubs.
Although that was fun being in St. Louis. I actually made we were talking about cognitive dissonance and at the Ethical Culture Center. And I was like, yeah, no, every human being has cognitive dissonance. We all do. Even atheists. I mean, look at me. I'm a Cubs fan. Laugh line. I was like, fantastic. Although these days I don't follow the major leagues quite so much because there's a PCL team like four blocks from my house.
We got a great minor league team at the
Yeah, wow. There's and the PCL historically it's a minor league now, but like in the 50s people were thinking about turning it into a third major league before the Dodgers moved to LA because there weren't any major league teams in this half of the country. And so the PCL it's a AAA team, but it's widely considered to be, you know, sort of AAA plus the level of play that they got there, and it's a lot of fun. So yeah, the Tacoma Rainiers are here. They kind of ended up in the floor this year, I think.
Yeah, a little bit.
they were riding high through most of the season, and then, oh, well, screw it, whatever. Well, they had to bring up the manager. They had to bring up Darren Brown, because I think the third base, or is it the third base coach? Or?
Not sure where you're going anyway, with that one.
Okay.
I'll have to look into it, though. That's interesting.
Yeah, no, I love it. It's my sport. I mean, around here, it's either Seahawks or Sounders. Most of my friends are Sounders fans. And
Sounders are?
The
MLS, Major League Soccer.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The statistics for MLS are so skewed by Seattle, because Seattle has so effectively set up the Sounders as a team. I mean, everybody. I mean, it's huge here.
Yeah, it's often larger than the football games or the, you know, it's kind of this.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it's very strange. And so being like, I think we're the only baseball people we know at this point. And it's like, why do you like baseball? A boring sport like baseball. It's like, it's more tactical than you people realize.
Yeah, I've noticed. I mean, just generally in the movement, I think there is kind of a dislike for a lot of the major sports.
Yeah.
Bill Nye hit on a lot of this last night, and you know, whenever he talked about sports, he would say, okay, this is a game that Americans play and a lot of people watch it. It's called football, and they have a halftime and everything. Yeah. And I thought it was kind of interesting, and I think he's probably right. I think the majority of people in the movement are not crazy about sports, and there might be some correlation there. I think for me, at least personally, I do remember around the time that I started thinking about organized religion and stepping back from it, I also at the same time started to question a lot of my different commitments in life. And I think one of the things I thought about was, does it really make sense to be a rabid sports fan? You know, to the point even necessarily where, you know, I'm from New York, so like New York Yankees fans and Red Sox fans like hate each other. And it's I mean, I get that you're rooting for rivals, but it's
when it gets to the level of
it's a baseball
of the,
game.
The great schism between the Roman Catholic Church and the Lutherans, you know, between Sunni and Shia.
Like I make the joke about I'm voting for the Meteor, I'm rooting for the Meteorite, but it's cheap heat. I'm making a joke. I don't actually believe that. We're all baseball fans.
It was around 2004 that I started. It was junior year of college that I really started to intensely question all this stuff. And that was also, incidentally, the time that the Yankees and the Red Sox were in the ACLS when I think it was Aaron Boone hit that home run to send the Yankees to the World Series, which they would eventually, I think, lose. But I remember like being in bars. I went to school in Albany, New York, and I remember being in bars, and it was interesting being in Albany because there's actually a lot of people from kind of the Boston area, or at least that part of the country. And then there's a lot of people from New York. So you go to these bars and there's Red Sox and Yankees fans kind of just, at each other's throats.
Sharks and Jets. Yeah.
I just remember thinking again, this is not what sports fandom necessarily needs to lead to, but it very often does. And to me, that just makes absolutely no sense. So, we should be able to appreciate the sports and root for teams without having to, punch each other over it.
So, Michael Lodore, thank you very much for your time. I think what you're doing is absolutely critical. And if you ever, I would like to talk to you again sometime and maybe catch up and see where the public policy stuff is going. Because, like I said, it's absolutely critical.
It was an absolute pleasure speaking with you. I'd love to talk to you again about this stuff. If any of your viewers have any questions, they can contact me. If you ever have any questions about political stuff, please feel free to contact me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
When we come back from the break, Sam talks with Becky and Mike about meeting the Pierce County Council on Monday.
Billy!
Billy!
Billy, I am the Queen of England. You must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it will explode.
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England. I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true.
come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
Secular humanism is a non-theistic view of the universe built on a foundation of reason, science, and democracy. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking, and we hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of free thinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. For information on how you can be a part of the humanist activities in the Puget Sound area, become a member of the Humanists of Washington today. Visit humanistsofwashington.org.
Out of the briny depths of the internet comes a comic book podcast so powerful it cannot be contained by a single continent. Mike and Paul save the universe.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Paul Root.
If you're an unsatisfied comics fan, we want to help you find better comics.
And if you've never picked up a comic before in your life, we want to help you find what could be your new favorite thing.
On Mike and Paul Save the Universe, we love the bejesus out of comics, and so should you.
Find us online at mikeandpaul.com.
Do you have an idea for a website but don't know how to get started? Are you tired of expensive hosting draining your budget dry? Archway Hosting can help. Archway's fully functional hosting service starts at $20 per year and includes hosting, databases, email, and much more. Have an idea for a website or application and don't know where to begin? Check out Archway. They also do web design and development. To get your online presence off to a great start, check out archwayhosting.com. That's ARCHWAY hosting.com.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And to sort of tie it into the last segment, we're going to be talking about local politics a little bit. With me is now is Mike. Hey.
Hey.
And Becky, hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Sam.
Okay. So if you heard last week, we found out that through our listeners that there was an appropriation or allocation, I don't know what they call it at the county level, of, was it $7,000? To Child Evangelism Fellowship.
Oh, in that case, you call it graft.
Graft, yeah. Apparently, there was some like leftover money, and the county council got to decide where it went and got to pick a couple charities or nonprofits or community organizations. And this is the one that Councilman Jim McCune picked, was this and one other one. Well, there's good news. As of the meeting last week, that money has been reallocated to an equestrian organization and the 4-H Club, which I think are much more worthy organizations for that money.
Yeah, there's one that does equine-assisted therapy, which is sort of emotional and physical therapy involving horses and being at barns and things like that for children with special needs or emotional needs. And the 4-H Club, which is a great organization, completely secular and looks at agrarian and animal husbandry and stuff like that.
So I'd like to play some of what we heard. Now, this first clip, I'm mostly playing it for you because after I was on the after I went to the council meeting and I was on local television, the county channel, and everybody was watching it, I got a lot of arguments. And the reason I'm playing this one is because it's emblematic of a lot of arguments I got on Facebook. The guy himself, you know, he's got kind of a sad story, so I'm not poking fun of him, but this is the kind of stuff that I've been hearing.
And I'm going to throw in what I have to think and say about it. Pierce County doesn't, but our government funds or provides funds the religion of abortion.
So that.
Yeah.
I actually got that exact argument on Facebook, not from this guy. I don't really get these non sequitur arguments when we talk about the establishment of religion.
Well, this is something that they want to do, is they try to turn it around and say, well, your thing is illegal too.
Yeah,
you started it. But really what it comes down to is they're trying to say everything that they disagree with or can be believed in or is thought or said is a religion. And that's simply not true. Okay, if this religion of abortion, name a holiday in the religion of abortion.
Can we invent one? I don't want to lend any credence abortuary. To the argument.
Yeah. Abortricon. Yeah, no. It's a medical procedure.
Yeah.
And that's all there is to it. There's no traditions. There's no clergy. There's no holidays. There's no special garb you wear. There's no traditions. It's...
What are some other things that they'll call religion?
Well, liberalism.
Yeah,
the state is a religion.
Or atheism
is a religion.
Yeah.
I've got the religion of public school.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Everything is the religion of, which is, I don't like that, therefore it's the religion of.
It's interesting that they'll call something they don't like a religion while they're religious themselves. I find that to be a very strange argument to make.
Really evangelical types, the crazier they get, you know, so those sandwich boards that they frequently wear at mm-hmm. events and say, this list of things will send you to hell.
Yeah.
And the crazier they are, the longer that list gets, and sometimes they involve things like alternative comics,
dancing,
sports fans,
yeah,
dancing. That's like the town from Footloose.
Yeah, pretty much. So I actually spoke. That was the guy who was first up, and I was like, okay, I got to follow that up.
Oh, so, nobody can follow that.
Yeah. So here is what I said.
Welcome.
Hi. And we can make fun of this guy.
Written stuff and not written stuff.
Okay, just make sure and state your name first.
Yes, my name is Sam Mulvey. I am a local business owner, a broadcaster, and I am the president of Humanists of Washington. By now, I'm certain you've all heard from other citizens, you've probably got an earful about the Establishment Clause problems with the $7,000 allocation to the CEF. Given the nature, stated purpose, and comments by the leadership of this organization, the idea that their work on taxpayer resources would be free of evangelism strains credibility to the breaking point. I'm certain I don't have to educate the council, but it seems to be a clear violation of both the federal and the state constitutions. The alternative is that Pierce County fund every philosophical and religious organization that comes along basically the same way, or violate the Establishment Clause. That seems to be the way of it in other places, and I don't think that's a road that Pierce County can politically or economically afford to walk down. I watched the video where Amendment 12 was passed, and I would not be surprised if that line wasn't really understood by most members of the council. I see the amount of paperwork that you guys have to go through, and I would miss it, you know, just me. Some other citizens have also gone through the budget, and we've seen that there's also a $15,000 allocation in the 2014 budget to Young Life Anderson Island. And I would like to read the vision statement. Every adolescent will have the opportunity to meet Jesus Christ and follow him. Now, you may agree with that statement, you may not, but that does seem to violate the Establishment Clause of the state and federal constitutions. I would ask that you also look at this very closely as well. I know Council Ladenburg has an amendment on to say that no county funding go to religious organizations in this way. I hardly support that as a citizen of Pierce County. And it also seems like the vetting process for these things really needs to be looked at very closely. I understand that a budget is a very big thing, and we are talking about small numbers compared to a $240 million budget. But again, I don't think this is a road that Pierce County can really walk down and survive economically. And I also want to thank the council for giving us a couple weeks to go through this budget and see what's there and give you our feedback. And that's all I really have to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So, Sam, it seems like you were received very politely, at least. But for those of us that weren't in the room, what was the reaction on the council members' faces? What was the reaction as you were speaking?
Well, I actually saw a lot of attention. I saw a lot of nodding, and a lot of them, I think, were pleased to pleased to have me come up and make my arguments so quickly. There's a 3-minute timer, and there's like a green, red, and yellow light down there to time you. And I was done in 2 minutes and 30 seconds, so I left before any of the warning lights came up, and I said everything I need to say. I got on with it. And in fact, after the meeting, somebody came up to me and said, "I disagree with everything you said, but you made some very you made some very smart arguments. Thank you for coming today." Turns out he was a youth pastor. It was really interesting.
And so that was not one of the council members, but one of the other citizens in attendance.
Well. Is it Council Richardson, I think? He started talking about the budgeting process and explaining it to us as if I felt like I was being talked down to a little bit.
You just don't understand, yeah. You people.
Becky watched watched the video, and she said she didn't come away with that impression. So I, then again, you know, I was in the room. They were actually, when they started making their comments, they would all pointedly look at me for a fair chunk of it. And that was strange. So it was a weird thing. It is worthwhile to say that everything about what I mentioned in that talk or in that speech, the appropriation was changed. Ladenburg's amendment to add that verbiage, which is direct from the Washington State Constitution, failed. It fell explicitly on party lines. And the Anderson Island appropriation, which was found by Robert Ray of Humanists of North Puget Sound, is still in the 2014 budget.
The thing I found interesting, Sam, is you mentioned that one of the arguments, you said the best argument that you heard against the Ladenburg Amendment was that it felt like it was redundant language.
Yeah.
And what I find really interesting about that is that, well, we don't need it because it's here. Well, clearly that this is an issue shows that maybe we do need this language at all levels, because clearly this is a body that needs to be reminded of this issue.
And that was exactly what I said. I actually went up three times. I'm not going to play everything I said. And I said, you know, as a coder, I understand redundant language. Redundant language can actually be harmful, but I do not feel that it's redundant language here. This to me feels like a patch, because the language as it exists isn't working if allocations like this are allowed to even come on a proposed budget. And so a patch code is clearly required here.
So what are the next steps regarding Anderson Island Young Life?
Right now I'm looking into what exactly that money is going to. I mean, we have a weird way, you know, government money can go to religious organizations as long as it's for charity. You know, it's the faith-based organization thing. So before I go after that, or before I follow up with that, I need to find out what that money is actually going to.
Again, with the Ladenburg Amendment, I'm not happy with it going there at all, simply because this is an organization which primary purpose is to turn people into Christians.
Yeah.
And it's unreasonable to assume that they're going to put aside that primary purpose. It's like if I have an after-school program that takes place at the circus, but I don't want the people there to talk about lion taming and clowns.
Right.
That's unreasonable.
I should also say that a number of listeners of Ask an Atheist also spoke. Dave spoke and did a really good job. There was only one person speaking in against the idea of changing the funding. Everybody else was for. And it was a really nice showing for Pierce County and for atheists and non-Christians of Pierce County.
I think there were speakers of several different faiths. There was a Christian speaker. There was a Jewish woman
and Cheryl and a couple people that I don't really know. And Dave did a really good job. The first guy said, you know, if this changes and this organization doesn't get money, you should donate, and at the end of this I'm going to donate $100 to this organization. And I think I've heard people say that before. It's like, well, they're going to get money anyway, so haha. But Dave actually got his name and came up there, and he says, I'd like to second what he says. Go fund, if that's something you believe in, go fund that organization yourself, just not with public money.
Yeah, it's not the job of the government to help an organization turn people into Christians. And I think it's also the fact that if you have an organization, again, the primary purpose, are we going to really have to create another job to make sure that the state is making sure that whether it's Young Life or the CEF isn't doing that stuff? Because when it's their primary job to make people Christians, their primary aim to make people Christian as a means to fix crime or whatever, then it's another job of the state to make sure that they're not doing their primary purpose. And it's just unreasonable to have to add that extra layer of bureaucracy when you could just simply find one of a dozen nonprofits that are on hand that would do that without that stated purpose.
Speaking of nonprofits, Sam, this was ostensibly to go to youth violence prevention. Was there any arguments that were presented either by McCune or by anyone else representing CEF that contended that this would actually help steer kids away from violence?
Frankly, McCune's argument wasn't that sane. Would you like to hear it?
Yeah, love to.
Okay, this is his response after all public comment was over.
This is my amendment, and at this time, I am shifting, but reluctantly shifting the money, just so the council doesn't take any pressure. It was all my doing. And under the First Amendment of the Constitution of the United States of America, it's okay. you all here
excuse me
benefit from that right religious freedom. Make no law against established religion, don't forget the no, or the free exercise thereof. And under the federal constitution, the free exercise is all right. Now, I realize we have a different opinion, and I respect your opinion highly, all your opinions, but this has to be under constitutional law, equal access to all groups. Because principles are taught by secular people, atheist people, Buddhist people, and Christian people. And so they have equal access all the way around. And the case law proves that over and over and over. I'm not a lawyer, but I get legal counsel. And I got some good lawyers. And I take their counsel. So, but I'm pulling this so I don't want to have my fellow council members being disrupted. And that's the basic reason why I'm pulling it. And you may one day see it back, you may not. But on the legal precedence, I'm going to do some case law work in the next year. And then we'll see what happens. But I appreciate all your comments. I respect everything you say. You probably need to look into the original intent of the Constitution and not the version that you see. Because if you go to the foundation of our country and all written documents, congressional written papers early, you won't see separation of church and state in any document in this country whatsoever. None. They never used it. They were against it. So I forge you to go ahead and go back in history, go back to congressional record, and look it up for yourself like I have. I don't go outside congressional records or Washington State records. I use everything's documented. So anyways, I appreciate your comments, and I am removing this reluctantly, and I hope the council will pass it. Thank you.
Let me count the ways.
How magnanimous of him to pull it away. It wasn't a defeat. It wasn't a smack in the face. I'm pulling this away because I don't want to create any problems.
Yeah.
Oh, what a doofus.
He's trying to avoid the fact that he...
lost?
That he lost, and it sounded like there was a lot of argumentation going on among the council.
It's like watching a boxing match, and it's like the first Rocky where he's just beating on him over and over again, and then just having Rocky Balboa go, oh, okay, we're just going to call this a draw then, guys.
Mike, so where is he wrong?
Everything. I'm going to say just the continents in this way. No, he's wrong in the fact that the Constitution does not say you can't pass a law against establishment of religion.
Yeah.
Because that would be an outright theocracy.
Yeah.
It says there can be make no law establishing religion.
Right.
And it's the exact opposite of what he says. And as far as free exercise, it doesn't mean that the government is going to fund your free exercise, which is what he expects. And equal access doesn't mean that government will give money to anybody saying anything.
That would be nice. Yeah.
I would be happy if the government wants to pay us to do our show.
Yeah.
But again, when you take government money, there are strings attached. And he wants to have it both ways. That there are certain things that you can't do once you accept government money. There are regulations that you take on.
Yeah.
If you want to, if you truly think that being Christian makes you more likely to commit crimes, then go fund that. Don't expect the government to pay for that for you.
Or being Christian makes you less likely to
do
crimes.
Yeah, it's not true though. I mean, you can go to any prison; it's full of Christians.
Well,
of course, they'll make a bunch of BS arguments around it. But again, if you want to pass laws to prevent youth crime, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
But again, it's got to be something constitutional.
So since we have the threat of this showing up on the Pierce County budget in the future.
Am I not?
Yeah. I think we can imagine that we're going to be talking a lot more local politics as time goes on. However, I would like to thank everybody who's met Peggy's Challenge in the last couple weeks. Peggy's Challenge is the challenge to listeners of Ask an Atheist to help keep the lights on. I'd like to thank Ron John from Seattle, Ronnie from Denmark, Michael from Elliston, Virginia, Lawrence from Grand Junction, Colorado, and Surrey Langley Skeptics in the Pub in Langley, British Columbia. Thank you guys very much. Now, I have some breaking news. It turns out Sylvia Brown isn't dead. She was found 55 miles southeast in a different town with another kidnapped psychic.
Yeah. That would be the answer that I'd hope to hear.
Sam, are you mixing this up with one of the young people who she supposedly communicated with?
Yeah.
From the alternate side of
Did you feel living with your mystical abilities, suddenly there was a lot less scamming going on in the world? I mean, did you have that Obi-Wan Kenobi moment?
There's still plenty of scamming, just not, there's a lot less high-end scamming, because this is like the Fredericks of Hollywood of scamming.
Right.
This is the expensive stuff. This isn't like, this is like the equivalent, instead of going to like the, you know, grocery store and like, oh, hey, they sell t-shirts here too. No, Sylvia Brown is a scam artist, or was a scam artist.
Right.
I don't feel sad that she's dead. I didn't want anyone to hurt her.
Right.
I wasn't calling for her death. But now that she's dead, I'm not going to pretend that she wasn't anything that she was.
Yeah.
Meaning that she was somebody who regularly went on television. Montel Williams can wave his hands all he wants and say this is just a piece of entertainment. But no piece of entertainment involves making somebody cry over their dead child.
Right.
And this is not a piece of entertainment in the way that Penn and Teller are entertainment.
Oh, it's not entertainment for the people crying over the dead child. It's even worse. It's people watching television because they want to see people crying over dead children.
These are desperate people.
I think there's a Tool song about that.
You look at the people who go to her shows. These aren't people who want to see a neat trick. They don't want to see somebody sawed in half. They're somebody who desperately want an answer to a question.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't say these things to a loved one when they were alive, and I'm bothered by this. This is somebody who says, I have a missing child and I'm desperate to have an answer. This is somebody who took advantage of that and charged $700 for a 30-minute phone call.
Yeah.
This is, and thankfully, normally the media has a tendency to treat her default as if her claims are true, and, oh, she's a respected medium. The New York Times, thankfully, did an op-ed where they said that she's an alleged or self-proclaimed psychic, and called her out on the fact that she's often wrong and she uses people's grief to fill her wallet.
Absolutely. And I hear there's 13 more, she made like 13 predictions, and I think we may pay attention to that because that'll be interesting. But unfortunately, that is all the time we have on Ask an Atheist. My name is Sam Moldy. With me today was Rebecca Friedman and Mike Gillis. Post show is at Doyle's in an hour. Meet us there. You can give us a voicemail at 206-420-0997 or email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. See you guys next week.
Clay Radio, your conversation station. KLAY Lakewood, Tacoma, on 1180 AM.